What's Ailing America? With your host, Dr. Rebecca Carlin, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases. Dr. Rebecca Carlin.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BBS Radio, its staff or management, and represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced diseases, please go to www.drcarly.com and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I went from being a surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. I do consults for people and pets with autoimmune disease and cancer and teach people how to reverse these problems with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and do everything based on a history. I do not have to see you in person. Please call me at the number on my website if you would like to learn how I do consults. I ask you to consider the information I give using your own God-given common sense and discern the truth for yourself. I love to answer your questions, so feel free to call in toll-free at 877-270-8714. The second line in the U.S. is 530-413-4515, and the third line is 530-876-4515. 3223. These numbers are all on the BBSradio.com website. They also have Skype and Pal Talk capabilities. If you're calling from Canada, the toll-free number is 888-228-4494. Every week I will answer the question, what ails America, with a different response, as well as share the good news of what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet. For awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware that inoculations are the true weapons of mass destruction, that the alphabet agencies that are out there purporting to protect us are actually doing the exact opposite, etc., etc., together we will cause an evolution of consciousness that will change everything in a heartbeat. And I encourage each of you to submit other suggestions for the show. And realize that if you don't stand up for the truth, you will fall for any lies. On tonight's show, the answer to what's ailing America is elder abuse by the system. And I am very happy to have as my guest tonight Annie McKenna from New York. Annie, I met in New York when I was doing public access television. And Annie's going to tell us her story as to how she went from doing a gardening show to a show talking about what's happening with the elderly, where they're actually taking control of the elderly parents by guardians and conservators. She has a very wonderful video on YouTube that talks about how the guardians can actually prevent you from seeing your family members. They isolate, medicate, take away your estate. They sell your home without your permission. And it was actually stated on this YouTube video that the conserved person has less rights than death row inmates. Hello, folks. I hope you heard what I just said. And that they can decide who and where who you live with and where you live, even if it's against your wishes. So I would like to welcome you to the show, Annie. Please do add anything you'd like to your introduction and tell us what's going on, and how did you get involved in exposing the abuse of the elderly by the system?
Well, thank you, Dr. Crowley, very much for inviting me on the show, because my mission in life has become to educate people as to what's happening with guardianships, because most people, when they hear the word guardian, they think of something good. You know, somebody's a guardian to someone else.
An angel,
exactly. They take care of them and whatever. However, since guardianships of the elderly only happen in a family usually once, none of those families are ever prepared for the nightmare that they're about to go through. Now, I know that I think originally that the law was made to protect people who, you know, who really were incapacitated and couldn't make decisions for themselves and had no family members to take care of them, in which case, had it remained that way, it might have been a good thing. The problem is, that isn't how it works at all.
Right.
What usually happens is that someone, and keep in mind, it could be anyone. Anybody can bring a petition against another person saying that they're incapacitated and they need, quote-unquote, protection so that, you know, they're not exploited. And
I want to underline mm-hmm. what you just said, because I'm aware of that, but that's very important. In other words, a non-family member could do this, correct? In other words, the family could be agreeing on everything, and somebody that perhaps has another motive or another intention could actually step into the family's business and get the courts involved. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Anybody who works in a hospital, your neighbor, maybe a long-lost relative who never came around but heard that you might be ill, so they do have that motive that they want to take over and hopefully get a part of your estate. Anybody over the age of 18.
Right. An attorney, that perhaps
absolutely
knows that the elderly person has a very large estate, could step in and pretend that the family is not interested and want to get appointed as guardian because he knows that that's basically, you know, a free ride for him.
Well, in fact, Dr. Crowley, what they do is let's say an attorney does bring a petition, what they do in many, many cases, and I have read and studied many of the cases that have happened in the past, and I noticed that there's a pattern, and part of the pattern is that they always go after the person who's really the caregiver, and they accuse them of all kinds of things, like being abusive to the person, trying to exploit them financially. Anything that they can say, they make up things about that person so that that person never becomes the guardian. Because what they have is they have a list of mostly lawyers who are appointed guardian by the court, and
yes,
that's their preference.
Yes, and I want to just make the quick analogy that the same thing is going on with children. And they're doing this with the most innocent and the most vulnerable members of our society, the children and the elderly people. And these guardians are, in most cases, from my experience, because I've had experience on both ends with clients as well as with my own son, as a rule, these guardians are the worst lawyers on the face of the earth, and they basically get in good with a judge in any particular case of any court. And they're appointed guardians because, you know, there's payoffs going on under the table. So these mm-hmm. lawyers are usually the worst of the worst to begin with.
Yes. In fact, many of them don't even really practice law on the outside. They just take these appointments because, you see, every time they're appointed either guardian or a court evaluator or anything that has to do with guardianship, they make a commission.
Yeah.
And they make commissions all around. You know, if they decide that you need an aide, they don't allow you to pick the aide yourself, somebody you like. They appoint somebody from, let's say, an agency that they're probably getting something from.
Of course.
I don't want to say that because I don't have any proof, but that's my belief.
I will say it because it's self-evident, Annie. There's conflicts of interest galore. And that's one reason I left New York State. New York State is one of the most corrupt states in the union, but these problems are actually happening everywhere. But
yes,
but please
are.
Tell us a little bit about your own personal situation. How did you get involved in this and totally, you know, shift your focus as to what you were doing in the past?
Well, in the past, I had lived with my mother for 27 years. 27 years ago, her house went into foreclosure, and I moved in and I helped her pay the payments, and we lived together for the last 27 years. And what happened is that I come from a family of five children. Two of my sisters are in Brooklyn. Now, before 2005, my two sisters in Brooklyn only visited sporadically. But when sometime in 2005, and they hadn't spoken to each other in about 8 years, by the way, but sometime in 2005 they got together, and unbeknownst to me, they were taking my mother to a doctor and to be tested, and they must have found out that my mother had something to do, you know, she had some illness that had to do with her mind, whether it was she was having strokes or dementia or Alzheimer's. I don't know, because they have never told me, even to this day. Uh-huh. And what happened is, they hired an aide to be with my mother. And secondly, they started telling my mother things about me that were lies. So eventually, because of my mother's illness, and I'm only speaking now in retrospect, at the time, I didn't know what the heck was going on.
Right.
But they were telling my mother bad things about me, and my mother was starting to believe them. They wanted my mother to divorce my father, and I became the enemy because I love my father, and I've always had a great relationship with my father, and so therefore they were claiming that I was working against my mother and convincing my mother about that. Then what happened is they took my mother to a lawyer that I didn't know about, and they started the divorce process, but then they also took her to a different lawyer, and they got all their directives, the power of attorney, the health care proxy, and the living will, and they became the agents of everything. They also had my mother...
Wait. I want to clarify a couple of things. First of all, you said you lived with your mother. Your mother was living with your father while you were living with your mother?
No, my mother and father had split up. About 1979. They were still married, yes. My father lived in California, and my mother lived here.
Okay, now the other thing I want to underline here is that they're taking your mother to a doctor to basically prove that she's mentally incompetent. But yet, at the same time, they're taking her to other people to have her change everything she's been doing for the last 27 years, which by definition is not possible. Because if she's mentally incompetent, then she's not able to change her whole plan that she's been doing for 27 years. So how did they get by that little problem?
Well, they had all those directives, and then they had her put her house in a trust. And then they just, after her divorce was final, they took her to the bank, and they had her take all of her cash out of all the accounts she had and give it to them. So now, unbeknownst to me, they had all her money.
And
now, what I think happened...
And you did not get reimbursed for all the money that you paid when her house was in foreclosure, that you helped her out of that hole. You did not get paid back for all that money that you spent.
No, because my sisters believe that I was living there, and I was living there, so I just considered it like rent I might have paid in an apartment. I really didn't expect to get anything back, but I did have my name on the deed,
mm-hmm.
you know,
because
as an owner.
Because it was your home. Yeah, it was your home, and you helped in paying the bills, yes.
In 1990, my sister came and said, you know, you're in your own business, and you might get sued, so you really should take your name off the deed, you know, just to protect the house. And I did. All right. Now, this is the same sister who's now leading this, everything that's happening with my mother. They're now trying to evict me from the house, and I'm fighting that, as well as fighting the guardianship proceeding, because that's what happened. After they took her to all these places and after they got all her money, they then had the aide for a couple of months, and on the day before Christmas in 2006, she walked out of this house, waited in the driveway with my sister, who had called an ambulance, and my sister took her to Huntington Hospital. This was the first of the nightmare. In Huntington Hospital, I went to see her the following day, and she seemed fine. And she told me, oh, I had a pain in my side, but they want to keep me here to do some tests. So I thought, okay, she'll be home in a few days. So when I called Huntington Hospital the following day or 2 days later, they said that she had been discharged. I thought she was coming home. I set up the tree, I put the lights on, and when several hours went by and she never came home, I said, what is this? I called Huntington Hospital back, and everybody told me that my sister said they are not allowed to tell me anything about my mother. What I later found out is that my sister moved my mother to 5 different nursing facilities closer to their house in Brooklyn. And it's very sad because this is where the worst of the nightmare begins. When I first went to see my mother after she left Huntington Hospital, she was in a place in Brooklyn called Holy Family. And when we went to see her, she seemed very docile. And I only thought she was depressed because she had said to me, this is a terrible place. The people scream at night. They don't sleep. They have nightmares. They make a lot of noise. I didn't sleep all night. And then she had also said to me when she was there that if I had known, I never would have had any children if I would have known they might end up in a place like this.
Wow.
Now, I still didn't really fully understand what was going on. I knew she looked like she was docile. And my sister, and my daughter and her husband and I and my son went to visit her, and they said, she's being drugged. And I started to think about it. I said, yeah, I think she is being drugged. But then by the time she went to 3 more places and she got to the end place, she was so drugged, and it was so aware to me that she was getting psychotropic drugs. And the reason I knew it was psychotropic drugs is that I have a family member who has schizophrenia, and they had treated him with several different drugs before they got him on something that helped him. So I know the symptoms. I can see what it does to the body. And I was screaming. By this time, they had started the guardianship, and I was screaming in all my papers that my mother is being drugged. My mother can't lift her head up from the bed. She needs a 2-person lift. She's incontinent. What happened over these few weeks? And everybody ignored me.
And not only that, but when we had discussions before the show, didn't you tell me that her main problem was, of course, memory loss, according to the diagnoses, and the drug that they put her on, one of the main side effects,
yes,
was memory loss?
Yes. I put this sentence in my paper. I said, my mother is being treated for memory loss by a drug that causes memory loss. Is anybody awake? No one ever addressed that.
Well, that's what they do in court. And we've had a few shows about the corruption in the courts, and I've experienced this myself in realizing that the court's function is to divert itself from the actual case and go down some sidebar and get all distracted by other things, and that's how they keep the cases going, and that's how they keep these courts funded. Because if they actually addressed the actual cases and did the right thing, you would not need appeals courts, appellate courts, Supreme Courts. You wouldn't need all these courts because if the right doer won, that would be the end of it.
Well, just something interesting just went through my mind, and it's this, so that you can really see how horrible it is. I online, there's a way that you could look up all the different counties in New York and what judges did what, you know, who they appointed for a guardian, who they appointed for this, and it lists how many guardianships they actually had. And I went back to between 1989 and 1994 to look up this one ex-judge, and I found out that in Queens, he appointed between 800 and 1,114 guardianships per year. In other words, in 1 year, he appointed 1,114 guardianships. Now, when you consider we only have 365 days in a year, and that there's 100 of those days that are weekends, we won't even count holidays. Think about appointing 1,000. Did I say 100? I meant 1,114.
Mm-hmm.
Over 1,000. And there's only 265 days that he's working.
Mm-hmm.
That's like 5 people a day he appointed guardianships for.
Right.
And in an 8-hour day, those people couldn't have had much. They couldn't have had much testimony or evidence presented.
Right, and that's what people have to realize is that there's no way that that number of guardians are needed. In most cases, family members are willing to take care of the elderly parents, and especially in your case, my God, you've been taking care of your mom for 27 years. What evidence did they present that you were not capable of continuing to do so? Because obviously
your sisters had
no interest.
That's the joke. They never let me get to that point.
Right.
They stopped it and wanted to have a quote-unquote settlement.
Right.
So that I can never prove that I didn't do those things.
And your sisters aren't taking care of your mom, right? They're not interested.
Well, now they are because the court allowed them to become the guardians temporarily, and they're supposed to bring my mother home, but they're not going to do that. They've made that clear.
Isn't she in a nursing home?
No, actually, I brought a habeas corpus and got her out of the nursing home.
So where is she right now?
She's at one of my sister's house in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Instead of coming back home, by the way.
Right. And so they're trying to kick you out of the house that you've lived in all these years so that they can get the money and pay off the sister to take care of her when your mom was doing just fine in the house with you.
Well, exactly. But also I think what they want to do is they want to sell the house, and then they want to put my mother in a nursing home for good, even though it's totally against my mother's wishes. And my mother has said at every turn, I want to go home to my house. I want to go back home.
Yes.
And they're ignoring her wishes.
Right.
And it's so sad that I have not been allowed to see or talk to my mother since she left here.
Now, wait a minute. For what reason are they saying that you are not allowed to see your own mother?
No reason. They don't give a reason, and they won't help me or give me visitation rights. My sister will not answer the phone to let me in her house.
Mm-hmm.
And in every nursing home, my sister said, don't let my sister, Annie, talk to my mother because she's going to help her escape.
Is there an order of protection against you?
No, I tried to get one. I tried to get an order of protection against my sisters in family court, Suffolk County, and they wouldn't give it to me because they said they hadn't really done anything yet.
So
I guess they don't.
But wait a minute. If there's no order of protection against you, then by what right do your sisters have to tell anybody that you are not allowed to see your mother?
Well, they don't have any right, but they have the power. Because my mother's in their house, and they will not answer the door or answer the phone when I call.
Well, all I can say is that I know that these things are happening. I've been involved in many cases. One of the CDs of a radio show that I did on another network that I give all my clients is entitled Doctors of Death. One of the things that I do is go into nursing homes and hospitals as a patient advocate, because I realized quite a long time ago that they're actually killing the elderly. There is no Medicare trust fund. This was the basis of Ross Perot's presidential campaign, is the fact he exposed that the Congress had stolen all the money in the Medicare trust fund. Since there is no money to pay these elderly people, what they're doing is killing them. And mm-hmm. I've had many cases where I've proved this. The most egregious case was a case in Suffolk County, Long Island, where they gave a elderly man, they wanted his nursing home bed, and I want to just explain this because this is something that happens all the time. When you go into a nursing home, they take a snapshot of your estate, basically all the money that you have, and this includes money that you've given people in your family in years prior. It was 3 years. I'm not sure what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, if a grandparent gives a grandchild money for college 3 years prior, when they go into a nursing home and they take this snapshot, they order that money to be returned. And what mm-hmm. they do is they spend all that money for the nursing home care, which is, of course, a joke. And anybody that's been in a nursing home knows that they do exactly what you said. They basically drug them up, and they get them into a position where they can't complain, and they're just sitting there like zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Once the estate has been drained dry, then they go on Medicare. And I am convinced that once they go on Medicare, there's some kind of a flag that's put on the chart that says, this one needs to go now. We need to get a fresh body in that's got money in their estate to pay for their nursing home costs. And in this particular case in Long Island, I reported a homicide in progress where this elderly man had been given a mismatched blood transfusion, and by examining the patient's chart, I knew that it had been done on purpose because the patient's family was never told what happened. They had a grandfather that was doing fine. He had a touch of pneumonia. He was sitting in his hospital bed, you know, watching TV, eating his little hospital meals, et cetera, et cetera. And then one day the family went in, and he was in the ICU, status post cardiac arrest, intubated, and they were basically trying to pressure the family to give a do not resuscitate order. Mm-hmm. And in that particular case, when I called the Suffolk County District Attorney, Thomas Spoda, and I reported a homicide in progress, they waited until the man was dead. And the detective that called me, and I did tape record this call, as I do with all government minions, and this is part of the CD of my radio show that I give to my clients, I told him what had happened. He called me back, and he said that the same hospital had killed his own mother, but there was nothing he could do. But he wished me well and was, you know, basically thanking me for my good works trying to help others. And that's when I realized that they all know what's going on, and there's been directives sent out to the hospitals, to the, district attorneys, et cetera, that this is what has to be done. We got to get rid of these old people. There's no money to fund them. So it's okay if they're killed in the hospital. And they're not just killed. I mean, it's not just like a Kevorkian death where they inject you with a little potassium chloride and you stop breathing. It's right. A horrible death. Where you end up on dialysis and you start to have your limbs cut off and things of that nature. They rake your insurance for everything they can get. And then once every specialty in the hospital has gotten their piece of the pie, then they let you die. And that's what's going on, folks. And if you don't do anything, that's what's going to happen to you.
You know, Dr. Carly, I agree with everything that you've said, and had we had this conversation a year ago, I would have said, oh, that's awfully radical. I mean, those people that are doing this, and who are the they? But I want to tell you, every day I look out into the world and I say, you know, how is this possible that all these horrific things are going on, and they're so silent behind. You know, you think you go out and you go to your job and you do this, and yet all these things are happening, and nobody exposes it. I mean, how is this possible?
Because the people that do expose it are ignored, labeled conspiracy theorists, whatever the case may be.
Yes.
You see, and that's the famous catchword right now, conspiracy theorists. Anytime you point out any wrong that's happening in the world, especially if you mention 9/11 or anything like that, you're labeled a conspiracy theorist. Well, as it turns out, these theories are realities, and that's what people have to realize. And a lot of people, you see, Ann, they want to put their head in the sand, because once you start opening up these cans of worms, it leads you to another can of worms and another can of worms.
Yes.
And there's ugliness and evil out there so intense that a person of conscience can't even comprehend it. Who wants to know this stuff is going on? Nobody does. So they would rather turn their head and just pretend that everything's hunky-dory and ignore it and just continue to go on with their daily life. Of course, once it happens to them, and that's the case with you, because when I was back in Long Island doing my public access show, which was also called What's Ailing America, I'm sure there were some of my shows that you saw that you said, oh, these are just conspiracy theories. But you see, the Creator is letting us all see what's happening. We go into the fire so that we know the fire exists. It's not a belief.
Mm-hmm.
It's a knowing. You are living it. You are seeing what they're doing to your own mother. And I know that you've now networked with a number of other people that have been so affected because of what happened with you. Is that correct?
So many. You wouldn't believe it.
I would not believe it.
And everybody's got their story, and it's always the same. You know, it's just a different time, a different place, a different person, but it's the same, you know, the same pattern. And it's very, very scary. I mean, think about the fact that as soon as the guardianship is brought against you, the court appoints what's called a court evaluator. And sometimes an attorney for you. And if you can possibly do it, get rid of that attorney immediately, because they're not going to help you. The attorney helps.
They work for the state.
Absolutely.
They work for the state, yes.
And you pay for both of those people out of your estate.
Mm-hmm.
Comes right out of your estate. Now, they haven't even proven anything yet. And usually, well, let's say in my mother's case, they brought a show cause order, and by law they have to serve my mother with the document. Well, they served my mother.
Wait a minute. Your mother who's been labeled mentally incompetent, correct?
Well, not yet, but that's their goal.
Okay, I thought she was labeled incompetent when they first took her to the doctor.
No, she wasn't. Well, you know what? I don't know what she was labeled. But
okay. In
the law, they can't say that you are, they don't say incompetent anymore. They say incapacitated. But they have to prove that by clear and convincing evidence according to the law. Of course, in reality, they don't do that. They somehow just stick it in that she's incapacitated.
Well,
even
they
though
have
they've had no hearing.
But you have to realize, they have their medical horrors as well. And this is something that I experienced when I was labeled with having a delusion of conspiracy, and the New York State Medical Board went after me. My conspiracy involved the fact that I said that child abuse was being covered up by the state. And isn't it funny how the same medical board that said I had a conspiracy, a delusion of conspiracy for saying that, as it turns out, was actually covering up child abuse themselves by allowing a pedophile neurologist to sexually abuse over 100 autistic children. And eventually in New York State, they actually passed a law in the legislature mandating that the medical board report criminal doctors. And that whole concept is insane to begin with. Why should you have to have a law mandating that the medical board, report criminal doctors? But as it turns out, these doctors that are criminals, and it's not just involving child abuse, it's involving elder abuse as well. Anyone with, a conscience and with common sense should have seen that your sisters had some other motive at hand here. They hadn't been involved with your mother for 27 years. So how are they coming out of the woodwork and starting all these proceedings to take custody of here, of her? It's self-evident that they have another agenda.
It is, but the court refuses to look at that or believe it, and it doesn't just happen in my case. I've met a couple of people recently. Actually, one man, his name is Daniel Gross, he lived on Long Island, and he went to visit his daughter in Connecticut, and while he was there, he had a little problem breathing. He went into the hospital, and before you know it, they wouldn't let him out, and they started drugging him, and he remained in a nursing home for 10 months until an attorney... And until an attorney brought a habeas corpus, and luckily on the very day that the habeas corpus was supposed to be heard, the judge who had been handling the case for 10 months wasn't there, and a new judge took over. And after a six-hour habeas corpus, that judge let him go free. And don't think that that judge hasn't suffered since then by all of his friends and you know, even the press. But he's free now, and his daughter says this. She has a motto that he made, and it's this. Isolate, medicate, take the estate.
Yeah.
And that's what they do in every case. And you know what? It's frightening to be made aware that these things are going on. It's frightening to me because I think these people have so much power to get away with any criminal activities they want. Sometimes I think, what if they come after me and they come, you know, they do horrendous things to me. And that's why most people don't want to think about these things or get involved, because they're just as afraid.
And they don't want to buck the system. You see, everybody goes along to get along. I could spend hours, weeks, months telling you situations that I know about myself personally as well as my clients where this holds true. And that's why we're now living in Nazi America, because people smell a rat. They see it with other people in the family or perhaps friends, neighbors, whatever, but they continue to do nothing. and silence is consent. And I will not go into my own personal case in great detail, but I will say that the judge in my son's case, the judge that allowed my son's custody to be given to his abuser, even though I was granted a divorce based on domestic violence, I sued this judge in federal court, Judge Richard Lawrence of the Nassau County Family Court, for 28 violations of my and my son's civil rights. The Attorney General of New York State, Elliot Spitzer, who is now the governor, represented this corrupt judge at taxpayers' expense. And his defense was the judge is immune even though corrupt. And the case was dismissed. And this is what people have to realize. As you're watching C-SPAN, they're having this big thing now where they're trying to hold these individuals that were conspiring to fire those attorney generals of various states. They're holding them in contempt because they're refusing to come and testify that Bush was involved. And it's funny how they're only interested when other attorneys are involved. But what people have to realize is that these attorneys and judges, they are conspiring together to take away your civil rights. And when a judge is involved, they are immune, even if corrupt, malicious, or incompetent. These are Supreme Court decisions, and this is what's going on. There is no justice in the courts, and the whole scam has to be exposed. We have to tear it down, and we have to start over again and build a system of justice. And what I tell people, if I was you, I would not go to court if you can possibly avoid it. I don't care what the situation is. Stay out of court because there's no winning. Even if you technically win by the decision, you will be financially raped.
Yes,
and I think we have a caller. Do we have a caller?
Yes.
Okay,
hello?
Please speak up. It's hard to
hear
you. And
yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. My mother is being currently held in Connecticut. She's been there for 3 years. She was taken by my cousin, who is not her blood relative, for medical treatment. We were told that she was going to be taken for 30 to 60 days, and she was taken from her home in Delaware. Once she got her up to Connecticut, she went to the court system, applied for conservatorship. It was done ex parte, which means on an emergency basis. There actually was
No, ex parte means that you were not allowed to be there.
We were not notified.
They did things behind the scenes.
We received a paper from the court saying that my cousin had been appointed temporary conservator of the person. She did not get conservator of the estate, but we've been in court ever since fighting this woman to regain my mother from her captors, because that's basically what she is. She's in jail. It may be a padded cell, but she's in jail. She cannot see her husband of 50 years because he lives in New Jersey. He cannot travel to see her. And we have to travel through 5 hours of traffic to go see her. And it's an absolutely horrendous situation. Her estate is paying three lawyers, which are court appointed, to fight her family to keep her there. And it's just a heartrending situation. I wouldn't want to wish it on anyone. And I totally agree with you, stay out of court. Although, be careful, we were sold down the river by our first lawyer who said, well, you know, you guys don't live in Connecticut, and your cousin is going to fight whoever raises their hand. So an independent conservator would be probably a good idea. He said, I know him. He's a good guy. Let me tell you, all the lawyers are in cahoots. There's hardly any of them I would want to save if they were in danger of death.
Okay, first of all, two things I just want to mention. I totally agree with you. I was involved with an estate in Brooklyn, a uncontested estate where the uncontested probate lasted for 12 years, where 18 attorneys were involved. Every single one stole more than the last. So I am very well aware of this fact. And basically, the attorneys are liars for hire. I know of two attorneys in all of my life that I've been encountered with who I would recommend that don't sell their clients down the river. And that's what people have to realize. You're going to pay an attorney to represent you, but if your case is the least bit controversial, or if the case has already been decided in the back room, they are going to sell you down the river, because if they don't do that, then they're going to have a problem with that judge down the line. The second thing I wanted to ask you is...
And they do everything in the back room.
Yes. Huh?
Things are done in the back room. That's
definitely
how it happens.
Oh, yes, and that's what ex parte means, in the back room. And that's illegal on its face. But I also wanted to ask you, you mentioned the fact that they wanted her to undergo medical treatment. What was this medical treatment?
Well, my mother had has Parkinson's. She had broken her hip, and my cousin said, oh, I have this great place up in Connecticut, and it's affiliated with Yale, and the doctors are from Yale. Well, my father had gone to Yale, so this was our cousin, so we never dreamed that she would be lying to us, so we agreed, and, you know, and things unfolded, which we just... We were blown away by how it happened. We had no idea what could happen, and but she knew exactly the system because she's done it before. And if you are dealing with somebody who knows the system and knows how to manipulate it, they can definitely use it to their advantage.
Well, because they've already got their whores lined up. They already know who they can contact to do what needs to be done. And one of the things that people have to realize, you know, you mentioned these Ivy League schools like Yale and Harvard and things of that nature. That's where all the secret societies are living. That's where all the people are that have taken an oath to not follow their oath. And so that should not be something that would, you know, engender confidence in you. That should be red flag.
In this
but
case,
people don't realize these things. And they have to go through this fire to realize what they're really dealing with.
Yes. In this case, Yale was used because my father had gone to Yale. So I think it was
But your father wasn't able to stop what they were doing, correct?
Oh, no. No.
So
and
Yale
we didn't
was
realize
used.
What was going on until it was already in the court system. And
right.
once
so
it's
they
in the
used
court system,
Yale as a way to engender confidence in you, correct?
Oh, yes, yes. Now we realize that.
Right.
So people will use whatever they
can
to
Oh, I know that. I'm not passing judgment, believe me. In all my various experiences with the legal system, you know, I believed that different people were going to do the right thing. Because, you see, people of a conscience, they can't even comprehend that such evil exists. So
That's
how could
correct.
You believe that these people would do what they're doing? It's not until they do it. That you
that
see it. My God, I can't not believe this. I know it. It's happening. And the poor elderly people are the ones that are suffering. And what's happening in your personal case, caller, is your own father allowed to see her now?
He's allowed to, but he can't travel. He physically, he's 82 years old. He just physically can't make the trip from New Jersey to Connecticut to see his wife.
And
I don't believe he should have
doing.
To travel 5 hours to see her.
And how did they make their excuse to put him out of the loop? I mean, whether he's 82 or not.
Well, because the court, basically the court says, first of all, she has three court-appointed attorneys, all collecting at least $200 an hour. There's the conservator, there's the court-appointed attorney who was supposed to say what my mother wants as
right.
if they know, and then there's the guardian ad litem who was supposed to say what she or he thinks is best for my mother. Now, these people don't know my mother or us from a hole in the wall, yet they've taken what my cousin has told them. They believe everything she tells them because that works to their advantage. You see, it's definitely a vested interest. It's in the interests of their pocketbook for my mother to stay in Connecticut. If she leaves the state, there goes their money. So clearly, these people are making decisions guided by their checkbooks, not by truly what's in the best interests of my mother.
And
if they cared about her,
I just want to make
they would want her reunited with her family.
Right, and I want to just make another statement that this whole idea of being paid by the hour... Who's monitoring the clock? I mean, they can say, in my own personal case, in this estate that I was involved in. I was a co-executor in this case in Brooklyn. And one particular attorney sent me a bill for $44,000. It was a one-paragraph bill. And what she mentioned in this bill was that there was multiple phone calls to Dr. Carley and a few things of that nature. And I submitted a 100-page complaint to the Suffolk County Bar Association about this attorney for all the different things that she had done, and they just blew it off because, you see, that's the way it works. That's the system.
That's correct.
These attorneys are allowed carte blanche. They can do whatever they want to do. There's certain things they can't do, like mixed funds or things of that nature, but they can charge anything they want. You have no way of knowing how many hours they're spending. But they can charge
bill,
whatever they want.
Yeah. We've seen
Let me tell you what the pattern is.
Okay, go ahead, Amy.
Let me tell you what the pattern is that I noticed with that. They make up a bill that's outrageously high. They put it into the court, and the judge says, no, 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 I'm going to knock that down. And the judge knocks it down, but it's all an act.
Oh,
there is
case,
no place in the statute that shows what a person is allowed to get paid by the courts for being your attorney or for being your court evaluator. They can
don't
just
knock anything
say,
down.
Well, I
they
normally...
Just, they just rubber stamp it.
Exactly.
Right.
And they can say, well, I normally get $450 an hour. So the court will give
you're
it
right.
to them.
So you're getting
what,
the bargain rate
the
of 200
their work. You see, that's one thing. The work of attorneys is one area where you don't have to show any actual results. They can
right.
tell you that they researched, they did whatever they wanted to do, they made phone calls. There's no way you can check on any of these things. And so they charge whatever they want. This is a raping of the system. And this does not
Absolutely.
Only happen in the case of people in your relative situations, but after people die and estates
mm-hmm.
go up for probate, this is another thing. The surrogate courts are designed to take the estates away from the dead person and give it to the attorneys, the judges, and the guardian ad litem and just split
yep.
it up amongst themselves. And if there's
yes.
a few dimes left
That's
over,
true.
They will give it to the heirs.
Can
yes.
I tell you an interesting fact about this whole thing?
Sure.
That the evilness that we're seeing in the guardianship goes all the way back to when they used to burn the witches in Salem. Because
uh-huh.
what they do is they would make accusations that were false against the women. And most
That's
of
true.
The time, those people who were, the women that were accused of being witches were women who didn't have husbands and who had land. And what they did after they burned the witches is that they took their land.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, basically it's the exact same thing happening now as what happened in the 1600s.
Yes, and
I'm
sure
figured out a new
elderly
twist.
Elderly women that are being affected by this situation rather than elderly men because the men don't live as long as the women to begin with. And even in the case of the caller where the woman has a husband because of his situation and that he's not in good physical shape, they just ramrode him also and basically
yes.
take away all his rights.
Right.
Correct.
And he's sitting there watching his wife be destroyed. Because once
yes,
they get admitted to the hospitals, to the nursing homes and all these other places, you have no control. They can drug them, not to
yep.
mention the fact
That's
that
correct.
It's actually the law in almost every state that they be inoculated with a flu vaccine and the pneumonia vaccine. And that is how they're killing these people, is by these inoculations with the disease.
Mm.
Yes, among other things.
Yes.
Yep. Well, it is a horrendous situation, and anybody listening needs to step up and help to educate more people and help to do something about this because otherwise, you know, it's going to happen to everybody. And
yes.
they just don't
yes.
see the horror of it until it's too late.
Annie,
and
have you
just
discussed NASCA?
Huh?
Have you mentioned NASCA?
No,
I haven't.
Do you want to tell them about
you
it?
You go ahead. Go ahead, Ann.
Okay. When I first started researching on the Internet, I didn't even know what a conservator was. And then through my, you know, research, there is a group called NASCA. It's the National Association to Stop Guardianship Abuse. And these are all folks who have gone through this, and it's a support group And I would suggest that anybody with an interest in this situation go to their website. It's stopguardianabuse.com or .org, and you will find horror stories, but you'll also find a few success stories, and you can join and have support, because it's we have to all hang together or we'll all hang separately, as one of our great patriots said.
And I want to ask either one of you, and thank you for their website. I don't have a lot of faith in support groups, because basically, as far as I'm concerned, that's a bunch of people just commiserating in their misery. We have to do more than do that. What would either one of you suggest to our listeners to prevent this from happening to themselves? Because apparently it doesn't matter what kind of legal remedies you do beforehand, because as Annie said, anybody can come in and say that something's being
That's
done
true.
And they can suck the courts in, and once they do that, you're in trouble. So what can we do to protect our loved ones and ourselves from having this happen?
Okay, well, I'll address
Don't trust
that
your
you
family members?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
don't
go
talk
ahead,
to strangers.
Annie.
Don't talk to strangers.
Yeah, well, when I went down into the archives and I started studying these, and I mean, I did this for hour upon hour. Finally, the ladies down there, like, really got annoyed at me and said, look, you know, you take up too much of our time. We're trying to do our work, but whatever.
Right.
And what I noticed is I really studied the people who didn't get appointed guardians, and they were very few. But here is what I would suggest, and I'm not a lawyer, but this is what I would suggest. You must have directives in place, and they must be in place before anybody can say that you were not competent when you signed them.
Yes.
And
yes.
By directives, I mean a power of attorney. You need a living will, which some cases say there is no living will in New York, but get one anyway. A living will and a health care proxy that will you'll put in there whatever your wishes are when the time of your death is near. And believe me, they're very important, because I saw so many cases where the lawyers and the guardians were fighting over whether they should put peg tubes in people or not put peg tubes and not force feed, you know. So
okay, wait. Let's explain to the listeners what a peg tube is, percutaneous esophageal gastrostomy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're feeding the people.
Yes.
And they're putting these tubes in order to keep them alive, yeah. Okay,
yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. So now the next directive is the power of attorney. And in the power of attorney, there should be several things. Number one, you should put down, I do not want to have a guardian placed over me.
But
then you should put...
Or conservator.
Then you should put, but if for some reason a guardian is ever placed on me, this is who I nominate as my guardian.
Right.
And you name somebody in your family, and you say, if that person can't do it, then I nominate this person.
Right.
And that I say that they become my guardian without having to place a bond, because
yeah.
That was a little problem I ran into, because my credit wasn't good. So the court evaluator was telling the judge that I couldn't be the guardian because my credit wasn't good and I might exploit my mother. So... You know, that's
yeah.
That financially. So that's one thing you have to put. The other things you have to put are your wishes. If I am in a hospital, my mother said, if I'm in a hospital or rehabilitation center and I'm ill, I want to come home and die in my own home.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of good it did her, right, because she's not home. But, you know, when you have these things written, your chances are much better. Plus,
yes.
You should take your property and do something with it. Either put it in someone else's name or put it jointly in somebody else's name or put it in some kind of a trust.
I mean,
the guardian can change beneficiaries, so it could wind up that, you know, that happens to you anyway. But these things are just things that will, you know, make you one step closer to not having a guardian.
Yes.
And here's the most important thing. I met a woman recently on Long Island who had a condo in Great Neck, property in the Hamptons, and property in Florida. Do you see what's going to happen very soon? Her daughter thought she needed a guardian because she was living in the condo and people were complaining about her, that she watched TV at night very loud, that she, you know, she didn't like the super. She would fight with the super all the time. So finally she got appointed a guardian, and the details I don't know because all of the paperwork was not in Nassau County when I went to read it, which is also common, by the way, that they don't let you even see all the paperwork. So she tells a story of how they came and they her daughter made the guardianship petition. She had a trial, and they appointed a guardian. And the guardian put her in an assisted living place, which she hates, and said that she had to have an aide to help her, right? And she found somebody for $500 a week, but he said, no, 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 you have to take the person from the place I recommend. So he appointed a guardian, an aide for her that she pays $1,500 a week. And she says, how can anybody afford that? That's too much, right? So and to make a long story short, one time she had a fight with the aide, and she fired her. And the next morning, the guardian came, and he had two policemen who strapped her to a gurney, brought her to the Hillside Medical Center and emergency room, and they had no room for her, so they brought her up the hill, as they call it, to the psychiatric ward, and they admitted her to that psychiatric ward for 1 month because the guardian was going to Europe for a month, and he had no place to put her. So they
this
put her
America,
in that.
This is America, folks.
Yeah.
It's happening
in America.
They put her in. They put her in the psychiatric ward, and they injected her with drugs. And she said that you know it was against her will. And finally, she got out a month later when the guardian came back. He put her back in the assisted living where she is now. And somebody's working with her to try to get the guardianship removed, which is very hard. But I definitely
yes.
hope that she wins. But the point to all this is that she said to me, with all the money I had. I didn't leave any cash in my house. If I had cash right now, I could get up and get out of here. So I recommend
well, not only
people,
that, but people believe that if they are a person of means, that they're going to be protected, you know, that they can hire the best attorneys or whatever to protect them. And actually what happens if they're a person of means, that's when the sharks come in.
Absolutely.
They view that
yes.
person as a free ride
if
for them and they can
yeah.
charge whatever you want, whatever they want.
If you're poor, they don't
said.
Care about you.
I'm sorry, what?
If you're poor, they don't care about you. And
right.
once they use up your money, you're thrown out on the street like
exactly.
a piece of garbage.
Right. Well, that's what I was discussing in terms of in the hospitals and nursing homes as well. Once the money's gone and you have to go on Medicare, that's when they put the flag on your chart and say it's time to kill you. And it's very easy to do. They can give you a mismatched blood transfusion. They can give you a drug that they know that you're allergic to. They can just give you a cocktail of drugs because elderly people have very old livers that can't handle all of these things. And so it's very easy for them to take people out. And I just want to mention one last thing, and then we have to go because we're running out of time. That's why the case of the Kevorkian woman was so important. Because what they were doing with that case is they were testing the American conscience. They were seeing what will Americans do when we have this woman who was obviously beaten by her husband and he did not want her to recover enough to testify against him, that he wanted her to die, and he got all these judges and lawyers to agree with him, and they caused her to die in a most painful way by starvation. And this was publicized internationally. And nobody
mm-hmm.
did a thing. And that's when they knew that the American people were asleep and that
they
continued
asleep.
To do what they were doing. And that's why the people have to wake up, because if you don't care enough about your own parents that you would get involved and wake up and investigate these issues, then what about you? Because there is nothing worse than to be put in a situation like this and to be tortured. To be put on dialysis, start to have your limbs chopped off. This is what they're doing, folks, in the hospitals all over this country, to the elderly people. They are killing them softly and slowly so that they can get whatever money they can from their insurance plans, and then they're letting them go. And
that's,
this is America, as you said.
I got to tell you, I just read something. Michael Schiavo was awarded Guardian of the Year in 2005.
Oh, my God.
Yes, by the Florida Guardian Association, if you can
well,
believe
this
it.
This goes to show you how the evil ones have infiltrated all these different agencies. And, of course, that's what they do. They have all these different agencies to give each other awards and pat each other in the back for their evil deeds so that people will be asleep and will not realize what they're